Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back to the Guys in Ties podcast. This is Dustin. I've got Rob on the phone. Rob is in Roanoke as usual. Rob, how are you doing down there?
I'm great, man. And how are you? I guess post-wedding, post-honeymoon.
I'm good.
This is what the people want.
This is what the people want. The people wanted some podcasts, and I was too busy getting married to to get it out. So anyway, so I married my now wife, CJ, and she is now officially a Wahoo. She cannot say otherwise. And yeah, it was wonderful. We were in Maui for a week. And it's just been kind of crazy. So the I watched the Miami game in Charlottesville, actually at Boylan, which was crazy. And then kind of good to go, nice to go back there. We got married on Saturday and then we left Sunday. So been gone all week. Watched the win against Louisville from the pool in Maui. And yeah, I'm just trying to catch back up with real life now. There's like actual things to do, and I wish I could stay on vacation forever, but you know, we can't have it that way. Unfortunately,
nah, man, it would have been too easy.
But
we must say it was a beautiful wedding.
Thank you.
Very glad the honeymoon went well. Dustin sent, you tweeted out the picture, which was from an iPhone and still looked amazing.
Yeah.
So, very much looking forward to the real wedding photos coming out.
Our wedding planner took a photo of us that I tweeted out at the very end, but we haven't even seen any of our actual wedding photos. So I'm pumped to see that and just see how the night was, because it was kind of a blur. And I've been piecing it together. I've called people. I called my best man right before recording this, actually. And he was talking me through the night, and I was like, "Oh, that did happen." And yeah, we did do that. And so it was good. It's been nice to hear other people's perspectives, because CJ and I are just like, we had our own kind of perspective, but everyone else's seems to be really good too. So glad you had a good time.
And I mean, there. An elite moment was the successful request for swag surfing at the reception.
Did it play?
So, yeah. Were you not there for that?
Dude, I don't think I was in the room for that.
Dude, we had swag surfing going.
I missed it. Yeah, I definitely didn't hear that.
Moment.
I didn't hear that. Okay, now I'm a little sad. Disappointed. My one disappointment from the night, didn't hear swag surfing at the wedding. Anyway, it was wonderful. But let's talk some football. And we're going to talk about the Louisville game and what a heart, how it made my heart palpitate in weird ways. And then we're also going to preview Duke. We're going to do some mid-season unit grading, which I'm looking forward to. Rob and I have not discussed our unit grades yet, but we will find out what we grade the units so far. And before we do that, we do want to talk about our sponsors from Spotify Green Room. Spotify Green Room is a live audio-only sports talking platform. You can talk to other fans, athletes, and insiders in real time. Get in on the conversations that you listen to on our podcast every day. You can download the app for free in the iOS App Store. You create a profile, link your Twitter, and join whatever group you want. Join Spotify Green Room and get talking about sports. We are also sponsored by Symbol. We have a new sponsor that you guys are going to love. Symbol is the stock market for sports that allows you to profit off your sports knowledge. On Symbol, you can trade sports teams like stocks, and every time your team wins, you earn cash. Use your sports knowledge on Symbol to buy low, sell high, and earn cash payouts when your teams win. Join the 7,000 plus early adopters who have started to invest in their favorite teams. Visit www.simbull.com. That's www.simbull.com. And use the promo code SD and your deposit will be free. That means even if you lose money, Simbull will refund your initial deposit, no questions asked. Join Simbull and start investing and profiting from your favorite teams.
UVA football is the softest bunch of cream puffs, bow tie wearing, brie cheese eating, NASCAR wearing wussies I've ever seen in my life. I'm going to punch people from UVA right in the neck. They wear suits to games. That's absurd.
So that was the first time I looked at that ad, and that sounds pretty cool, I would say. I don't sports bet a lot, but that seems like a different kind of sports betting.
I will say we love all our ads here at the Guys in Ties podcast, regardless of market or target audience or target use. So
yeah.
But yes, it does seem interesting.
I do. I will say I miss Blue Chew and I miss Manscaped. I wish we had both.
That's exactly what I was alluding to. I'm glad we're on the same page.
Yeah, it's not as fun when Rob doesn't have to turn off his mic to when I do the ads, because how do we know how funny it is? Anyway.
Dude, the first ones were great, Manscaped especially. Yeah.
Anyway, but let's talk Louisville. So UVA wins their game on Saturday. This is Thursday night, by the way, at around 7:30. We win 34-33. Who's almost blow it, and it was a crazy game. Back and forth. You know, Rob, what were your thoughts and feelings during the game, after the game? How'd you feel?
I mean, during the game was just stressful the entire way. After the game was just pure relief. And, you know, it was an incredible effort, honestly. Like, this is an offense that at this point in the season really doesn't have a running game. Virginia loses its top receiver and Dontavion Wicks on the first drive. Mm-hmm. And Brennan Armstrong goes out and, you know, had some misfires here and there, but 40 of 60 pass attempts. 60 pass attempts is insane.
Yeah.
Brennan really just put the offense on his back. The defense made plays where it counted. You know, it was an incredible effort. And I'm going to be honest, like, I try not to tweet during games and, you know, was more active than I normally am during the Louisville game. And, you know, it was frustrating. A lot of people had some thoughts. And, you know, anyway, I was called out one time and certainly, you know, I was wrong. I'll just put it that way. And it was an incredible effort. And, you know, I always think back to the first season when, you know, the first season under Bronco, when not a lot of things were going really right. But Bronco was talking about, you know, how you have to learn how to win and how you have to really believe. And that it was so common in the Mike London era that teams would fall behind and they might lose a lead and they felt like the game was over. I was dejected. And we've seen Virginia come back from smaller deficits. We've seen them make second half runs before under Mendenhall. But to be down 30-13, and, you know, I would say the majority of the fan base kind of writing that game off. And to have that type of comeback, it speaks volumes for the players. You know, Brennan on offense, that fourth quarter drive was incredible. Keaton catching those three critical balls. I mean, the defense was far from perfect, but they made stops when it counted. You know, there's just so much credit to go around.
Yeah.
And I was really, really impressed.
Yeah, it was a great effort from the team, especially in the fourth. I mean, fourth quarter was incredible. I was on vacation and I saw the third quarter. It just got worse and worse and worse. And so in the third, after the half, of course, we're up 13-10. Both teams missed field goals to go into the half. But, you know, Louisville comes out with big plays. They score a touchdown on the opening drive of the second half. Brennan throws a pick. Our next drive, Louisville kicks a field goal. They're up. They go up. They score 10 points really quickly. We punt. They score another touchdown. We throw an interception, and then they kick a field goal. So it's 30-13, and at this point, I think a lot of people, myself included, really kind of checked out because that is a huge deficit to overcome. That's just a crazy, crazy amount.
No question. And I mean, like I said, I just go back to that first season under Bronco when, and, you know, he even described it at his opening press conference. He was like, yeah, this team just looks dejected. They look like they're out of it. Like, you know, that basically those teams couldn't do what this team did. And I'm not standing up here saying, I don't think anybody is, that this team is like a perfect 4-2. You know, it was a fun first 2 weeks, and then we saw the flaws of this team and losses to UNC and Wake Forest. And listen, Virginia's come out ahead the past 2 weeks, but we've seen pretty severe limitations at times in both of those games against Miami and Louisville, respectively. But you got to give a lot of credit. Miami, certainly, but this Louisville win, I mean, this is something that we have not seen from the Virginia team in a long, long time. And it's possible because the culture, honestly. It's possible because you have a quarterback like Brendan Armstrong also that is certainly at playing at an all-ACC level, currently leads the nation in pass yards. I mean, think of that. Like, all the years of, like, you know, think of the late Groh era through the Mike London era of the offenses that really, really struggled, and here we are with the nation's leading passer under center for us. I mean, it really is an incredible win. And again, like, this isn't the best team we've ever seen necessarily out of UVA, but it's impressive in its own right. And that win is one that I'm going to remember for a long, long time.
Yeah, that, and that coupled with the Miami win back-to-back in back-to-back weeks just really, I think, and once again, we've talked about swings this season. We've swung somehow all the way back up. You know, we go from losing to, you know, just getting smacked by North Carolina and Wake Forest. And I think a lot of people having a lot of doubts about this team, especially about the defense, you know, just with the way the defense was playing, it was unclear how far the team could go. You know, even with a really prolific offense with Brennan Armstrong under center. But now we have a, after the long break against Miami, you know, we have a couple extra days to practice and to get back on track. You know, we have a defense that, you know, gave up 33 points, but they stuck it out when it mattered. In the fourth quarter, they give up a, they force a punt on a three and out, and then they force another punt on a three and out. They limit Louisville to a field goal in the, kind of in the closing minutes, and then Louisville misses a field goal, of course, to end the game. And not to say it wasn't really stressful watching the Louisville drive down the field at the with 22 seconds left, but they got really close, but our defense somehow pulled it out. And I think, as you said, speaks a lot to the mentality, speaks a lot to the coaching, speaks a lot to the players that we have leading this team, like Brennan Armstrong, like those players on defense, on the defensive line that have been here forever. Even without, you know, our leader on defense, Joey Blunt, for this game, I think they did a really good job of bending a lot and only breaking just a little bit.
Yeah, and, you know, as far as the defense goes, they did play a good first half, you know, held Louisville to 10 points. The second half, you know, they got gouged, especially in the third quarter. But, you know, credit where credit's due. You know, they made stops when they really, really needed to. And a play that comes to my mind, or the sequence of plays, was when Louisville was driving. It was about 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and it was second and one. And Nick Jackson made a tremendous sideline stop, really showed his speed on that play. And then it was third and one, and Jameer Carter drove the center back about 5 yards before he made the tackle. And, you know, Broncos speaks a lot about this. It's kind of the Bill Belichick mindset, and a mindset that I kind of share. But is that situational football essentially wins games. And, you know, there's a lot of plays, you know, think about it. There's over 100 plays between both sides of the ball that happen in between a game. But most games really come down to a subset of, call it, 5 plays. Mm-hmm. And if you can win those 5 plays that really, really count, then you have a great chance at winning football games. And Virginia made mistakes on defense, certainly. I mean, like, long runs. There were deep passes on the first play of the game, for the defense at least. But when it really counted down the stretch, Virginia made plays. And the one thing I will say, too, is that, you know, this defense gave up a lot on the ground. You know, aside from the first pass of the game, they really did a pretty good job through the air.
Yeah.
Malik Cunningham, take out that first, like, 90-yard pass. And, you know, he essentially finished with 180 yards passing, yeah, which is, you know, pretty good. But they did a great job containing Malik Cunningham. And if you go back and watch the game, and I'm containing Malik Cunningham on the ground specifically, where last year he ran for 197 yards against UVA. This year he ran for 38. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it goes down to the way it was schemed. You know, you didn't see guys really getting that far upfield on their rushes. I think it was a point of emphasis to try to keep him in the pocket. And you also look at third downs, they used the 1-5-5 looks a lot, which they kind of broke out for the first time, adding Wes Weeks and Hunter Stewart into the lineup. They kind of broke that out the first time against Miami, really, and they used it even more so this past week against Louisville. And I think that helped on third down to try to contain him and keep him in the pocket with the extra speed on the field. So anyway, there were adjustments that have been made, and there's going to be adjustments that continue to be made in this new defensive scheme. But you do have to give the defense credit for, you know, I would say probably keeping Malik Cunningham in the pocket was probably a huge point of emphasis. And then also for just making those plays when it really, really mattered in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, they did a really good job. And, you know, you're right, taking the first play of, what was it, 92 yards. And the defense did really good in the first half. And, you know, honestly, they did really good in the fourth quarter as well. So, you know, I think they're getting better. I think we're getting somewhere with them. And hopefully they can do enough throughout the year or the rest of the year that our offense can pull away in certain points. And so that's go on.
Oh, you got it.
No, I was just going to say, you know, looking at the next two games we have versus Duke versus Georgia Tech, these are two games that I'm really hoping we can, you know, do something with, because Duke is, you know, they're 3-3 so far, but they haven't won a ACC game yet. And Georgia Tech is also 3-3, and they have their, you know, 2-2 in the ACC, kind of like us. But they've lost to Clemson. They almost beat Clemson, and they lost to Pitt, and I guess Pitt's pretty good now. I don't know. They have a great, seemingly have a great, you know, quarterback duo in Pickett, and I forget what his receiver's name is, but they've got a great connection there. But I'm hoping that our offense can take advantage of, you know, some of the more mediocre teams in the ACC and win some games, get ahead while we can.
Yeah, and I mean, looking ahead, before we'll get this part out of the way before we dive into position unit grades, but this was always the part of the schedule where UVA needed to make up ground. It was a challenging stretch having UNC, Wake Forest, and Miami. That was always going to be a challenging stretch at the beginning of the schedule. And then it was always going to be a challenging stretch at the end, and it still is, where they play at BYU versus Notre Dame, which does look more winnable now, by the way, but then at Pittsburgh and home against Virginia Tech. So this middle part of the schedule was always the part where they needed to catch up. And to our credit, I don't think either of us expected, you know, these nail biters towards the end, but we did, both of us, in our season preview predictions, have us at 4-2 right now.
Wow.
Which is exactly where we are.
Amazing.
So, you know, it's, admittedly, it could be 2-4. There's really not that much separating from where we are, but
yeah,
at the same time, you know, we're 4-2. So I think Virginia hopefully is able to make up some ground here. And listen, I mean, if they can clinch bowl eligibility, beat Duke, and beat Georgia Tech, two games that are not gimmies, but two games where UVA will be the favorite team. If UVA can take advantage of these next two games, be 6-2, you know, towards the end of October, I think that's going to be a big sigh of relief before this stretch that comes up. And I think that was part of the angst that, you know, certainly affected me and I think a lot of people during the Louisville game, is everyone kind of knew how this schedule worked, that this was like supposed to be the winnable stretch before UVA gets into the back half of the schedule, or the back third of the schedule, really, where it gets very, very tough. And in order to kind of clinch bowl eligibility, to feel good, Virginia really has to, you know, take advantage of the next couple weeks. And they did it by the skin of their teeth against Louisville. So hopefully it'll come, you know, hopefully a little bit easier here in the next 2 weeks against Duke and Georgia Tech.
And just a note on the two wins away in a row. That hasn't happened to Virginia since the 07 season. Two away ACC wins back-to-back, which I think says a lot about how much this team has struggled on the road for a long time, not even since Groh, you know, we've struggled on the road. So, you know, it's been a long time, and, you know, hopefully this team is in the right mind space to keep doing it. And I'm looking forward to this game against Duke. I think it'll be good, and I'm excited to, you know, turn on ESPN3. It's been a while since I've, you know, turned that on. Since I've turned that on, and, you know, it'll be a good time.
Yeah, hopefully I will be there this Saturday. That's the plan, at least. But either way, man, gonna be watching at home, in the stadium, whatever it is. Should be a fun weekend, man.
I am unfortunately unable to go. I want to, but I need to take care of life in Alexandria because I've been away for, you know, 10 days or whatever. But it'll be okay.
And I will say, while we're on the Duke game, have you seen the uniform combo for this game?
I haven't. I haven't, because I was updating my Wi-Fi was like being wonky earlier, and I haven't looked at Twitter all day, so I don't know the combo. Can I guess?
Take a guess right here. It has been released.
Okay. I'm going to go... Are we all blue?
We are not.
Oh. Okay, let me get one more. Okay. I bet we go blue helmet, blue jersey, and white pants.
Okay. Also incorrect. It is the first time we have worn this combo under Mendenhall. It is blue, orange, white.
Ooh.
So blue helmet, orange jerseys, white pants.
I like that.
A common combo under Mike London, actually, but the first time under first time under Bronco that we're wearing it.
Well, maybe I don't like it as much.
It'll look, as long as we win, it'll be okay.
Some bad juju with that color combo. Although, London never had the new logo on his jerseys, so who knows? Maybe that will change everything.
That's true, and the orange jerseys have kind of like the weird secondary logo that I don't like on the collar.
Oh, really?
So maybe that'll help, maybe? I don't know. We'll see.
The one with Cavman bowing his head?
Yeah, the Batman one.
Yeah, the Batman one. The sad UVA fan one.
God, we're going too far back in time now.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so before we get into our unit... mid-grade rankings. Are we mid-year rankings? Any last words about Miami or Louisville?
So, no words about Miami or Louisville. I will say, when it comes to Duke, I think it's very interesting. You know, just the way this defense has evolved. And I say this because Duke has a very good running back and, Mateo Durant. So, you know, they're going to run the ball. Durant has 788 yards on the ground this season.
Wow.
Virginia, I mean, that's more than Virginia has total on the season. Virginia has 678 yards total on the season. So he's a very good running back. And we'll get into kind of the intricacies and the nuances of the defense here as we go through the grades. But I will say, Virginia, they were a top three defense in the ACC in rush defense last year, but they were worse. They were the worst defense in the ACC against the pass. And this year, on a per attempt average or a per completion average, Virginia is slightly better, but still about the same against the pass. But this defense is much worse against the run. They're the worst team in the ACC against the run. Yeah. 5.25 yards per carry,
yeah.
201 yards per game on the ground.
Yeah.
So I will say Virginia really probably has to sell out to stop the run against Duke. I think Virginia should be able to beat Duke. And, you know, Duke, they haven't played, you know, that good of teams. And, you know, they've struggled against some teams that aren't that good as well. You know, this is a game Virginia should win. But I think the key to this win, as many people have said, is really slowing down Durant and this Duke rushing attack.
Yeah.
And that's the hope, that they're able to do that, because this defense has struggled on the ground. And if there's one thing that concerns me into this game, it's that matchup, Duke's running mm-hmm. game versus Virginia's rushing defense.
Yeah, I will say that Duke's quarterback does not look that good. Gunnar Holmberg, he's got 1,600 yards on the season, 6 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. He doesn't really scare me that much. I would much rather try and make him beat us and pack the box. And I hope that the coaches see that too. I'm sure they know this. You know, they know better than we, they know better than me. But I hope that we do better, because, you know, Hassan Hall also destroyed us on the ground last week for Louisville. He averaged over 10 yards a carry and just wrecked us when they had the ball. So I'm excited to see how our defense responds. I think that they should have a nice boost from last week, you know, really stopping Louisville from winning that game. And I'm just looking forward. I'm looking forward to a nice noon kickoff, like I'm used to. And I can get on with my day after that.
That's right. 12:30, man.
Yeah, it'll be beautiful. It'll be beautiful. Let's go ahead and we can move forward with our mid-season grades for our position units. But before we do that, I do want to talk about our sponsors from Spotify Green Room. Spotify Green Room is a live audio-only sports talk platform. It is free to download and free to use. It is perfect for watch parties, debates, post-game breakdowns, and reacting to breaking news. Talk to other fans, athletes, insiders, reporters in real time. All you need to do is join Spotify Green Room by downloading it from the iOS App Store. Create a profile, link your Twitter, and join whatever groups you want. Join in the sports talk with Spotify Green Room. We are also sponsored by our new sponsor, Symbol. Symbol is the sport stock market that allows you to profit off your sports knowledge. There are two ways to make money on Symbol. First, every time a team you own wins, you earn cash win payout. Second, just like the stock market, if you think a team is going to increase in value, you can buy low and sell high for a profit. Use promo code SD to make your first deposit risk-free. That means even if you lose money or just decide the market isn't for you, Symbol will refund your initial deposit, no questions asked. Join Symbol today. All right, Rob. So let's go ahead. We're going to do our mid-season grades for our position units. We ranked them to start the year, and I'm going to be honest, my rankings have changed dramatically as the season has gone on, and I'm sure yours have as well, but we haven't shared our grades with each other. And Rob, would you like to start with offense or defense? Do you want to start with good or bad?
Yeah, let's start with offense, man.
Okay. And
I think, yeah, again, like our lots of times we'll do kind of like rankings, I guess this is like ratings, like on a grade scale. Either way, yeah, let's start with offense. And starting with offense, we'll start with the quarterback. And really, this is the Brennan Armstrong show.
Yeah.
You know, I would say A, if you want to get picky, A minus with a couple interceptions. But, you know, this is a position unit where, you know, the backups, I think what I did in my grades coming into the season is, you know, the backup room is still a little bit unsettled, mm-hmm. and I still don't feel great about the backup quarterback situation right now if someone has to come in and play. but, you know, grading Brennan Armstrong, leading the nation in pass yards, 17 touchdowns, you know, he's been incredible. Like, there's no other way to say it. He's completing 65% of his passes, a higher clip than last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really incredible. Like I said, if you want to get picky, he's had some untimely interceptions. Maybe if you want to get picky, A-, but this is a position group on Brennan Armstrong's shoulders that has been incredible this year.
And I agree with you. I would say A, and, you know, leading or being very close to the top in passing yards. He has, you know, what, 17 touchdowns so far this season. He has been outstanding and way better than I think anyone could have imagined this year so far. I just think that he's done a great job of improving. He has not taken any, you know, unnecessary risks with running or anything like that. So he's stayed healthy so far, knock on wood. The 6 interceptions are a lot, but, you know, when you're down a lot in games, you got to throw. And sometimes he's forced some stuff, which is not great, but, you know, he's doing his best. Yeah, I just, and, you know, if we're doing the quarterbacks as a whole, the other ones have been great too. You know, you look at Jacob Rodriguez, Ira Armstead have both contributed. Keaton Thompson is not a quarterback anymore. He's a football player, but he's also been doing great. And I guess he's in the wide receiver group now, but he's still listed on the roster as a quarterback. So, I'm kind of lumping him in both, which is cheating. But I think an A is well-deserved for this quarterback room. I really do.
Yeah, I do too. And it's funny you say that about Brennan, you know, health, I guess. The thing is that he's been playing with a knee brace for the past 4 weeks, really. I mean, he hurt it against Illinois, his knee. And, you know, you still see it when he gets out of the pocket on scrambles. He still has that speed, but they're not really calling design runs for him anymore, or at least right now, as long as he still has that knee brace on. We'll see. You know, maybe it's kind of like Bryce Perkins 2019. As the knee gets healthier and the brace comes off, he'll get more design runs back in the playbook. But the reason I bring that up is because last year, so much of what Brennan Armstrong did was on the ground. And there were two games last season. The entire season, there were two games where he had fewer than 15 rush attempts.
Mm-hmm.
And some of this includes sacks, and we're not going to go back and net that all out. But, you know, 15 rush attempts. The only two games he had less than that were NC State, the game he got hurt, and Abilene Christian, the game where he was done by the middle of the third quarter because we were beating them so bad. So this year is completely opposite. Well, last year he was running the ball a lot, taking tons of attempts on the ground. This year he's sitting back and he's a pocket passer. He's throwing deep, he's throwing intermediate, he's throwing short, he's going through progression. I mean, he looks like a really, really good quarterback out there because he is.
Yeah.
And it's been really impressive to watch.
Yeah, it's been really fun. And I've, you know, it for so long, we've wished for kind of an offense like this that's fast, it's fun to watch, it's up-tempo, there's a lot of passing, there's big plays, a lot of touchdowns. But, you know, football giveth and football taketh away. We no longer have a really good defense anymore. And, we'll get to that later. But I think, you know, the quarterback position has been far and away the best position group, mostly because of Brennan, and just much more impressive than really I imagined this season.
No question. So with that, let's move on. Unless you have anything further to say on quarterbacks, let's move on to running back.
Yeah.
And for me, running back is a difficult position to grade because they really don't run the ball that much.
No.
And so it's kind of interesting. I will say I will give them a B, which honestly feels a bit high, but I will say, like I said earlier, situational football.
Yeah.
When the running backs have been asked to, you know, take on a load, they've delivered. And Miami was really the best rushing game of the season, 181 yards on the ground. In that game, we saw Mike Collins have a longer touchdown run, at least as far as UVA standards go. We saw Wayne Talapapa's second career 20-plus yard run. So that was a long time coming for him. So anyway, we've seen them deliver in some capacity when they've been asked to. They just really haven't been asked to. So, I don't want to nitpick this too much. I would say I feel like a B is fair, that whether it's short yardage or, you know, situationally, when they've been asked to run the ball, they generally have been able to. It just hasn't been very frequent.
No, I agree. Our leading rusher so far is Wayne. He's got 185 yards on the season, as you said. And, you know, he's averaging about 5 yards a carry. He's got 2 touchdowns. He's doing great. He just only has 38 rushing attempts on the year, which is, 22 less attempts than Brennan threw in the last game. So, it's just crazy how much less the running backs are being used than I thought. I really thought that they would try and use him more this season. I don't know why I thought that. They've shown no indication of ever trying to do that. So if I were a running back, I would not come to UVA because you don't run, right? Like, poor Ronnie Walker only has 3 attempts on the whole year. He rushes 8 yards per carry. That's really good, but he's only got 3 so far. He has 24 yards rushing on the whole year, and he's got 20 yards passing, receiving. So he is almost more of a receiver than a running back at this point. And, it's just kind of befuddling sometimes why they're not used more. If Brennan's passing so well, why do anything different? And so I think that's kind of where they're at right now. But I agree with you. I think a B is fair because they do a great job when they're asked to. They just don't get a lot of run in, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. Well, a couple things on that, actually. So one, you say you thought that Virginia was going to run the ball more and you don't know why you thought that. Well, the reason why you thought that is because that's exactly what the coaches told us.
The entire offseason,
the coaches were like, oh, we're going to run the ball more. The traditional ground game is going to get emphasis.
Yeah.
And I was skeptical. I went back through the numbers and I actually wrote a piece on Who's Place about this before the season that, listen, like, the numbers don't support what the coaches are saying. Like, they might be saying this, but, like, there's reason to be skeptical. And I think that's been true mostly through the year. I would say also as far as grades go, I think we got to see what happens with Mike Collins. Mm-hmm. Mike Collins has been more of the receiving back, more of the, call it explosive, for lack of a better word, back through the first half of the season. He exited the game early against Louisville. Mm-hmm. Looks like something with his ankle. Don't want to speculate. He's still on the depth chart, which means it's probably not a season-ending injury, but I guess we'll have to kind of see what bears out there. And God, I had so much on my mind. There was going to be one more thing I was going to say, but I forgot what it was. But anyway, I feel like we've generally addressed the running back room, unless you have anything else to add.
No, I agree. I think it's good. But I just, I like our running backs a lot. I think they're all really talented, but there's just no plays being called for them. Wayne is by far the best 1 yard rusher I've ever seen in my life. And he only has 2 touchdowns so far this year. So, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But I really like them. There hasn't been much production because of the coaching calls.
Yeah, and I remember what I was going to say now. And it's perfect transition into wide receivers. And that, I want more balance on this offense. Again, situational football. When it's third and short, when it's goal line, when it's, red zone in general, I want to be able to have the option to run the ball. Mm-hmm. And I think that is important. And I think that kind of was a problem a little bit against Louisville, at least in the first half, is UVA's inability to run the ball. And I think it limited the playbook and played to Louisville's favor, at least inside the red zone. But, listen, the reason that, or at least part of the reason that the running backs haven't been emphasized enough is because this passing game is so good.
Right.
And, we talked about it with Brennan Armstrong. And as far as wide receivers and tight ends go, I mean, I'm going to give it an A. I'm not going to second guess this. I think wide receivers and tight ends, they deserve an A the entire way.
Yeah.
Jelani Woods seeing him for the first time against Illinois, like walking into the stadium at like 11 a.m. that Saturday morning and seeing how big that guy was, that was a shocker to me. I knew he was big, but I didn't know he was going to be that big.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, this receiving corps is so deep. Billy Kemp, Sean Henry, Dontavian Wicks, Keaton Thompson. I mean, we're not even talking about Lavelle Davis.
Yeah.
So it's a really deep receiving corps that has lived up to the hype. So much credit goes to Marcus Hagans, and heck, even Robert and I for really scheming this whole thing together. I'm not going to second guess this. To me, wide receivers and tight ends are an A.
I agree. You know, we have had so many people step up this year, and you even talked about it. You were hyping up this receiving core from over the summer even, and in the spring you were saying, oh, like this our receivers might be good. And, you know, receiving has been such a – it hasn't been bad recently. It's just, you know, kind of been, you know, one of those things where we had good receivers, but not great receivers. I think we have great receivers. Dontavian Wicks is a game changer, averaging 22 yards a catch, 5 touchdowns so far this year. I hope he's okay. Do you know if there's an update on him?
So he was, I'm trying to think. I remember the 3 in the uniform release video. I can't remember if it was Wicks or Anthony Johnson. Okay. I have not heard an update. I think he was held out of practice Tuesday or Wednesday. I think with Bronco, Thursday is the big game. If you're able to practice Thursday, then you can play. But no, I don't know.
But okay. But anyway, like even without Dontavian Wicks, we were still fine against Louisville. You know, Rashawn Henry really stepped up in that game. Billy Kemp has been super solid the whole year. We've got 4 receivers with over 400 yards receiving and 3 receivers with 4 or more touchdowns. You know, Jelani Woods has 4 touchdowns, Billy Kemp has 4, and Dontavian Wicks has 5. Keaton Thompson, our second leading receiver with 436 yards, doesn't even have a touchdown yet. So Brennan's been slinging the ball, but these guys have done a really good job of mostly catching them. There's been a few drops here and there, but nothing that's cost the game or anything. And I'm just really excited to see, you know, what this team can do when Lavelle Davis comes back. If he comes back this year or if he comes back next year, you know, he can add a lot to this team. And, you know, these receivers are really, really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to kind of preseason expectations. I went to the spring game, and I think to anyone who went to the spring game, you kind of saw the glimpse of, hey, Dontavian Wicks is really good. Hey, Jelani Woods is really good. And that was kind of my tip off that, hey, I think these guys are better than they're getting credit for. I mean, listen, like, aside from really the first season, I mean, even if you want to talk about 2016, Virginia has had really good receivers under Mendenhall, under Anai. I mean, going back to Olamide Zaccheaus, Andre Lebroni, Downey Dowling. I mean, those guys were good receivers. So, you know, I think what happened last year is the COVID year was so weird, but you had a big drop off in receiving production last year with Joe Reed and Hassis Dubois graduating. And, you know, at times, you know, you had Lavelle Davis, who was a true freshman last year, but at times it almost felt like you were playing with two, like number 3 receivers in a way. Like, Billy Kemp is so good out of the slot, and they've moved him around a lot more this year. He'll play on the outside more, which has been nice to see. But he was mostly in the slot last year. And then you had Terrell Janna. He was a very good receiver in his own right, but he was pretty clearly the number 3 receiver in 2019. So it just didn't really feel like you had like the full complement of a receiving core. Yeah. But then you come into this year and you see you have Dontavian Wicks back, and he's a true number 1. Mm-hmm. You have Rashawn Henry, who's a complete receiver, probably could be a number 1 if he was asked to, but he's a great number 2. Billy Kemp is amazing from the slot, knows exactly where to be. Best route runner, you know, probably best route runner on the team, although Dontavian Wicks is pushing him. I mean, Keaton Thompson has come so far from a year ago.
Yeah.
Jelani Woods, you know, credit to Tony Poljan for playing the way he did last year, but Jelani Woods is a much more dynamic player. So, like, you have all these pieces this year, and it feels like a full complement of a receiving core. Like, you have kind of the gadget guy and Thompson. You have, you know, Wicks, Henry, and Kemp as kind of your traditional 1-2-3. You have a legit tight end. it just feels so much more complete.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest difference this year is there's so much depth. And we're not even talking about Malachi Fields or Danique Starling, who had that 65-yard touchdown catch in the opener, or Grant Mish, who's mostly been asked to block, but he caught the game-winning touchdown against Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just so deep. And again, credit to Hagans, you know, really credit to both of the tight ends and Woods and Mish. It's impressive.
It's been really impressive. And you said it all perfectly. I mean, there's nothing else for me to add. It's been really, really impressive what they've been able to do. And I'm super excited to see what they do going forward. I think they're going to do really, really amazing things. That's my guess and my hope.
Hey, as long as Hagans is coaching, I think that's probably going to be the case.
Yeah.
We'll see if Lavelle Davis comes back this season. I mean, that could add even something more.
Yeah.
So anyway, with that, let's transition, you know, we had our happy part. We had our fun part. Let's get to the defense.
Oh, wait. We need to do offensive line.
Oh, my God. I'm looking at my notes, and I missed that. Okay. You were right. I apologize.
Well, maybe it's not happy, but we still need to do them. They're not the most sad, I would say.
Okay. I didn't have my notes. I didn't write this down. This is shame on me. All right. Offensive line. On the fly, I'll say B-. I'll say offensive line was really impressive through the first 2 weeks. You know, Brennan had all day to throw. And mm-hmm. then, you know, you kind of get to the North Carolina game and the pocket starts falling apart. And all of a sudden, we're experimenting with lineups. Bobby Haskins is in at left tackle. You're sliding Ryan Nelson into guard. You know, Jonathan Leach is playing some as swing tackle a bit. They haven't been bad per se, but I don't think they've necessarily lived up to the hype that we had coming into this season.
I agree.
Do you agree?
I agree. I was going to say B- or B. I think that, you know, they've been giving Brennan a pretty good pocket a lot of the time, but, you know, Brennan does have 18 sacks on the year, which is a lot through, you know, what, 6 games? It's 3 a game. I would prefer to see him hit less. I would also love to see them just have better run blocking. You know, they've had trouble with run blocking sometimes this year. But, you know, I can't complain. I would say that I think in general, the I think a B is fair for them.
Yeah, and I'm glad you bring up run blocking because there's a difference between run blocking and pass blocking as an offensive lineman. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I'm an expert, but from my amateur eyes, I feel like our guards and Joe Bissinger started the year, but really struggled, was benched against Wake Forest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still think he can have a good future ahead of him. It's just apparently maybe this wasn't the time. But anyway, I think he's a better run blocker. Than a pass blocker. I think Chris Glazer at right guard is probably a better run blocker than pass blocker.
Mm-hmm.
But then you look at Olu at center, you look at the tackles. I think it's pretty clear those guys are probably better pass blockers than run blockers.
Yeah.
So anyway, as a whole, I think this offensive line, especially now making the move, moving Nelson to guard, moving Bobby Haskins back out to left tackle. You know, I think this is an offensive line that is built to be better in pass protection than they are in run blocking. So anyway, it matters, you know, that's a big difference. And
mm-hmm.
I'd love to, for them to get back to the way they were playing the first 2 weeks of the season. And obviously it's a different level of opponent. You know, Illinois, I don't think it's proven to be as bad as we thought they were after mm-hmm. the second week, but still probably not. I mean, they wouldn't really be competing in the ACC, I don't think. And obviously William and Mary at the FCS level. So there's a big step up in competition from the first 2 weeks to, you know, what we're playing now. But, you know, I don't expect this to be a dominant run blocking offensive line, but I would like to see him get back to how they were playing the first few weeks as far as pass protection.
Yeah.
I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. And of course, you know, William and Mary and had a terrible, terrible time with that. And as you said, Illinois probably isn't so bad, but, you know, they've been pretty good, and they've let Brennan sling it a lot, so I think a B is fair for them. But I can't say as much for the defense, which we can get into right now.
Well, let's do it. And I guess as far as the defense goes, you know, I guess we've talked about it a little bit the past couple of weeks, but, you know, to kind of revisit what we thought in the preseason, yes, Virginia is running a 3-3-5 defense as opposed to a 3-4. And I will say there's probably been more challenges with that transition than I expected.
Mm-hmm.
When teams want to throw the ball, they generally can. Statistically, UVA is better against the pass, but I think they're better against the pass because teams can run so much better than they could last year.
Yeah.
And teams are choosing to run the ball more instead of passing.
Mm-hmm.
That's my take, at least.
No,
so
I agree.
This defense just is in a period of transition, and I understand this is a move that has been made for kind of the long term of the program, you know, and it makes sense. Teams are moving more spread offenses. They're throwing the ball more. It makes sense, at least on paper and in theory, to want to move more towards a 3-3-5 to have more players on the field. And a lot of teams run this, you know, NC State runs a version of this. Syracuse runs a version of this. Oklahoma runs a version of this. It's still relatively uncommon, but it's becoming more common,
yeah,
as far as a defensive scheme. But it's taking some time to adjust, and we'll get through how these units are playing. But, you know, just to preface this whole discussion, that's where we're at. And I don't think anyone's really forced Bronco or forced Hal on the issue as far as, you know, why make the scheme switch, you know, what was the thought process going into it. I'd love to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
I think generally I know what the answer is, as most people do, but Bronco at least is very insightful in his answers, and I would appreciate to have his context at some point. But anyway, that's kind of the background of what we're going. So with that, unless you have anything else to add, we can hop to the defensive line.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. What would you give the defensive line?
I was going to say B-.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I say that because, you know, at times they've made plays. You know, listen, Mandy Alonso, to an extent, almost single-handedly won that Miami game. I mean,
yeah.
Mandy Alonso was all over the place. Jameer Carter, at times, has, you know, he has been perfect at the nose, but he's gotten better. And that push he had against the Louisville center last week in the fourth quarter was really, really impressive. And
mm-hmm.
Aaron Famui, you know, Famui has kind of taken some time to get back to probably the level he was playing at in 2019 after opting out last year. But they've moved him to end in recent weeks. And
mm-hmm.
part of that is because they're using Jordan Redmond more at nose. Part of that is because Adib has still been out at defensive end. But he's played a lot better. I think he had 2 tackles for loss against Louisville. So this is a defensive line that has made plays here and there, but this is also the same defensive line that got really pushed around against UNC and Wake Forest. So I think there's been improvement in the past 2 weeks. So, you know, B-, I think I'm okay with,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, certainly still a ways to go.
Yeah. No, and it's tough because, like, they've come in with, and there's a lot of promise. I feel like they got good push the last couple of years, but it just hasn't been there. You know, we don't have any sacks. I'm not sure that they have any sacks this year off of the offensive line. Noah Taylor has a few. Mandy Alonso has 3, and Aaron Famui has 1. But, and you know, definitely not as much as we would have liked, but it's just tough because they're asked to do a lot in the 3-3-5, and it's just, you know, tough to see that they have been really unable to do a lot with it.
Yeah, and from what I've read, apparently Rocky Long, who was, you know, Bronco coached under at New Mexico, and was really the first person to bring about the 3-3-5 as far as having 3 safeties on the field, which is the version Virginia is running, but from what I've read, he says it's, you know, call it a 2-3 year process to really get comfortable in the scheme.
Mm-hmm.
And it's different for the defensive linemen, too. This is another area where I'd love Bronco's insight. But from what I understand, they played a lot more. I mean, they played almost exclusively 2-gap
yeah.
responsibilities in the 3-4 and in the 3-3-5. From what I understand, it's much more 1-gap responsibilities. So it's a different way of playing defense. It's a different way for them of attacking, and I think, you know, when everyone feels comfortable, hopefully it'll be a system where the defensive line can get more tackles for loss or mm-hmm. get more sacks.
Yeah.
But for now, I think we're still seeing some growing pains, and, you know, it'd be great if we got Adib back on the defensive line. I think he can make a big difference. you know, credit to guys playing maybe before it was planned for them to play, like a Nusi Malani. Sue is in there as well. Ben Smiley has been playing less the past couple of weeks, but he played some earlier in the season. So anyway, they're rotating guys, but I think it's safe to say, you know, there's still a little bit of ways to go.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I just hope that they get there eventually, and I'm sure they will, but just right now at the moment, it's been a little bit tough sometimes. Not tough, but I just think that, you know, they haven't necessarily played up to it's been tough for them to play up to what they could be, especially in the new defensive arrangement.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, let's move on to linebackers, which I think were going.
Yeah, you read my mind then.
Yeah.
Linebackers. Man, this one kind of pains me to do this, mm-hmm. but I mean, C+, B-.
Yeah.
I think the linebackers is the position unit that has struggled the most with a scheme switch.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say C.
And it's unfortunate because I still think that's maybe as much, you know, maybe, I don't know, you could debate it, but at least defensively, I think there's the most talent on this team in the linebacker group.
Yeah.
You have Nick Jackson, who's, you know, was a preseason All-ACC recipient. Noah Taylor. You know, there's guys that are kind of respected, proven stars in the ACC. And Noah Taylor, I think, has shown well at times when he has the opportunity to rush the passer.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Jackson still leads the team in tackles. But, you know, it's a group that I think has struggled the most with the scheme switch. And, you know, in the 3-4, the way we played the 3-4 was it was designed for the linebackers to fly around. It was designed for the linebackers to be the playmakers. And in the 3-3-5, I think the biggest struggle you're seeing out of these linebackers is the new gap responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And they just seem to be playing a bit slower, a bit more hesitant, as if they're thinking a bit more than they had to. And, you know, I think the best way to say it is that guys have been out of position here and there
mm-hmm.
on some of these big run plays. And, you know, by no means am I an expert, and I'll defer to other people on this, but from what I can tell, I think there's on a lot of these longer runs, it's normally a linebacker who's been out of position.
Yeah.
So, you know, Nick Jackson is a great player. He's going to continue to play the middle linebacker spot. Noah Taylor, you know, can be a really dynamic player, as we've seen before. So, I mean, he's going to continue playing. You know, Elliot Brown, I'm still surprised we haven't seen more Hunter Stewart in that position, honestly, both as far as production goes and also kind of looking towards the future as well. I will say I've liked these 1-5-5 looks the past couple weeks and getting Wes Weeks on the field. His speed is apparent, and I think he's going to be a good player for UVA in the future. So I still think there's talent in this room, and I think there's a lot of potential among the young guys too. It's just been a shame that, you know, what was once the strength of the defense, I think is probably, you know, the position group that's struggling the most to kind of grasp this new defensive scheme.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's been a little frustrating, and not frustrating because they've played bad, but just, you know, as you said, out of position a lot. Nick Jackson's leading the team in tackles. He's had some really good plays. Noah Taylor's had some really great sacks and some really good plays, but it hasn't necessarily been consistent. You know, I feel like if it was more consistent throughout the year, it might be, you know, the grade might have been higher, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I agree. And listen, we've seen good moments. I mean, Noah Taylor has had some good rushes.
Yeah.
As far as getting after the passer. So is Hunter Stewart. Nick Jackson has made some strong plays against the run throughout this season. But as you said, like, especially on these stretch plays, you know, they stretch out wide, and the defense, you know, you miss one gap and the running back just gets through the hole and it's gone.
Right.
And I think another thing that kind of hopefully will come as the scheme develops, but, you know, we're really not seeing much pressure out of these linebackers, especially mm-hmm. from the base defense. It seems like they've gotten more pressure the past couple of weeks. and those 1-5-5 looks. And early in the season against William & Mary and against Illinois, they were playing a lot of 2-4-5 on third down, and they played that much less frequently the past several weeks, but that's really where their pressure was coming from. You know, inside stunts. I think all three, or at least all two of both of Noah Taylor's sacks against Illinois came from inside stunts. So all I'm saying is basically you're seeing less playmaking ability out of the linebackers in the base scheme. And you think about it, when they were in the 3-4, you know, you had the dogs up the middle, you know, and Zandier and Jackson, they would get pressure on stunts. You had Snowden and Taylor who get pressure on the outside. And we're just not seeing that same kind of attacking, fly to the ball mentality, at least from the new base set from the linebackers.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And I just think it, I just wish that, I don't wish, but I think as the year has gone on, it's gotten a little bit better, I think. And, you know, hopefully when, you know, we've got these two games against Duke and Georgia Tech, and hopefully they can make it through those. And then we've got a nice bye week before Notre Dame. And that's kind of the big one where you're feeling like, oh, like I really hope that we can do something there that will really make it worth it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just feel like I want more out of them, and I haven't gotten it yet.
Yeah, and again, like I think if we were playing the 3-4, we would be getting a lot more out of them. Yeah. I think this scheme switch has been hardest on the linebackers, and to no fault necessarily to the linebackers, I just think that's how it is.
Yeah. No, I agree.
So, anyway, with that, let's move to the secondary, the last position on the defense we'll talk about. I'd say kind of same as the linebackers, maybe like C+, B-.
Yeah.
You know, they played really well the first 2 weeks, and it's kind of been a bit of a struggle since then. Although I will say I will give them credit for better play against Louisville. But I think Anthony Johnson has been more than we expected at corner. I think he's played really well. I think Joey Blunt, when he's on the field, has played well in that, you know, call it safer middle safety position.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of the defense is still kind of figuring itself out, you know. Cohen King played a lot last week at safety, and he's a great story. And he forced that one fumble and actually recovered it himself. So, you know, maybe he'll get more time. I think Antonio Clary, you know, when he filled in for Joey Blunt and the Sabre safety, he played well. I think he struggled a bit at the deep safety. You know, cornerback Pintrell Cypress was a guy that kind of caught a lot of people by surprise. And how much he's been playing. I think everyone, myself included, really thought Darius Braddon would be playing more at the field corner spot, and it's really been Pintrell Cypress. Josh Hayes, the transfer from North Dakota State, he just this week entered the transfer portal again. So, you know, we'll see how our cornerback depth is tested in the coming weeks. So, a long way of saying, you know, I think we've seen some positives, but there's still been, you know, some play that just isn't exactly what you want. And, you know, maybe if we're setting a high bar, expecting it to be 2018 every year, to have Tim Harris, to have Bryce Hall, to have Juan Thornhill, or I mean, even go back the year before when in 2017, when Bryn Nelson was ACC Rookie of the Year, when Quinn Blanding was on that team. You know, there was a high bar set at the beginning of the Mendenhall era.
Yeah.
And I think these guys this year have played better, but I don't think it's anywhere close to pushing to what the defense was a few years ago, the secondary in particular.
Yeah, I agree. And it's been, you know, this is the position unit that has suffered the most over the years. And I just hope that eventually we can get back to having a really good secondary. And, you know, it's been so weird to see it. As I said earlier, we've transitioned really from being a defensive team to being an offensive team. And it's interesting how, you know, our secondary used to be by far the best position, and now wide receivers are so good. I just think it's kind of interesting how that's happened and how it turns out like that.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, what we haven't seen so far this year, which maybe we'll see kind of the second half of the year, is, you know, really the youngsters on this team get some run. You know, Elijah Gaines and Donovan Johnson in particular, both of them played some at points last year. Neither of them have really played this year. You know, we've seen Lex Long a little bit, who's a freshman, play in the secondary. We've seen Jonas Sanker, who Bronco has hyped up in the preseason. He's played on special teams, but I think he could be a good player at safety, although he hasn't really played in base sets. So, and then guys at corner, you know, we really haven't seen any of the young guys. If you want to count Fentrell Cypress there, maybe. So anyway, it's kind of been the same cast of characters that we've been used to.
Yeah.
That have been playing this year that also played last year. So anyway, I'm curious if we'll see more guys in the second half of the year. Maybe we won't, and maybe they'll kind of lock down what they've been working towards. But yeah, you know, I don't want to be too critical there, because I think there has been a step up in play, at least from last year. And I think part of that is a credit to moving guys around, you know, moving Nick Grant to safety, getting Joey Blunt closer to the box. Devontae Cross is kind of in the safety nickel corner hybrid, but it's certainly better than being the boundary corner, which is where he played last year. So they're moving guys around, but I don't think it's 100% there yet. That's, yeah, I guess what I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's been a struggle to watch. And I've said this whole year, like, this team is going to go where the defense allows it to go. Unfortunately, it's not really totally up to Brennan Armstrong how good this team can be, even though he's been incredible. It's been frustrating at times, you know, especially against, like, you know, team like North Carolina, where we put up a ton of points, but we just couldn't get anything done with it. And it's just unfortunate that this team is the way it is. And I love the offense. I wish the defense was playing at a higher level. And unfortunately, we can't have that right now. Rob, special teams, what's your grade been?
I'll go B. Okay. And I think, God, I mean, I wish, still going back to that William & Mary game, and I haven't seen a replay on it, but man, I wish Mike Collins, whatever that flag was, I think it was like a block in the back or the holding, but it would have been so much fun if Mike Collins was actually able to return that kick for a touchdown.
Yeah.
But I digress. I'll say B. I think the return unit has been, you know, steady enough, unspectacular, but just avoid mistakes. I would say Billy Kemp probably gave us all a heart attack against Miami with a couple of those bobbled punts. Mm-hmm. But overall, he's been solid, you know, catching what he needs to, which is, you know, his kind of role back there. I've been impressed with Jacob Finn at the punter. Field goal kicker, you know, credit to Brendan Farrell, man. You know, coming in the season as the number three kicker behind Dunkel and Hunter Pearson, he's made all the attempts. Well, I guess he missed one technically last week against Louisville, but he's been solid, made his two attempts against Miami. Hopefully we'll get Dunkel back. Not sure what his timeline is. Hunter Pearson is out for the year, so I guess it would be Farrell kicking until Dunkel comes back. Mm-hmm. Dunkel did miss those two against Illinois, but I think he'll be okay. I like him as a kicker in general. So anyway, I say all that. There hasn't been anything like dynamic. It's, I guess, you know, maybe Jacob Finn's punt at the 1 yard line, which led to a safety, you know, that was a very good play, but
yeah,
you know, it's been solid and steady, not spectacular, I guess, but can't really complain, I guess is the best way to put it. So yeah, I'll give him a B.
Okay. A B is nice. A B How is do nice. You feel about I think, teams? I think B plus. I think Finn's been really good, even though we really haven't punted that much this year. And even sure, with having two field goal kickers, you know, with Farrell and Dunkel, they've both been pretty good. You know, they haven't missed any extra points, which is always good. Farrell has, you know, is 4 out of 5. Dunkel was 4 out of 6, with the only misses coming. Well, Dunkel missed a, you know, in a field goal within 30 to 39 yards and one from 40 to 49. But Farrell, the only one he's missed has been from over 50 yards, which is, you know, understandable at times. And so I'm just, I'm excited to see, you know, what, if we can keep going and how we, and how we figure it out the rest of the way.
Yeah. I'm curious to see how kickoffs go. I'm trying to, slipping me who returned kickoffs after Mike Collins went out against Louisville.
Yeah.
Hopefully Mike Collins doesn't miss much time. But I mean, to be honest, the kickoff is becoming, unless you have a really, really dynamic player like Joe Reed was back there, it's becoming less of a focal point of the game in general anyway. So I will say I've been very impressed by Jacob Fan. And at Jacob Fan, if it's not the most UVA football thing ever to just have a long line, I mean, we're talking like 6-7 years now of really good punters at UVA.
Yeah.
So he's been really good. Jacob Fan has.
He's been great so far. The only mistakes, really, there was that kickoff mistake that we had where we ended up on like the two or something because we fair caught but dropped it. That's been a weird rule this year. But, you know, Billy Kemp hasn't muffed any punts that I can remember. And I just think we've been doing a pretty good job overall. So, B+ from me.
All right. I can get on board. Yeah. I'll change mine to a B+.
Oh, okay. I'll get on board. Nice. I like that. Nice teamwork.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how we do it, man. Guys in ties. listen, I mean, there's areas to improve. I think there's obvious areas where this team has been really good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, do you have anything else to add on top of those grades?
No, nothing else. I just feel like we've been – this team is – there's been, as I said earlier, so many ups and downs with this team. The two-game losing streak and then the recent two-game winning streak has really kind of turned the season upside down kind of twice, I think. I've definitely had a change of heart since the wins against Miami and Louisville. And I'm just hoping we can, you know, make this a three-game or a four-game winning streak to really help us out in the Coastal Division race. You know, we are so far... You know, we're not doing too bad in the Coastal Division, but we're for sure not, you know, in the lead. We are third currently at 2-2, so you know it's good when we're in the top half and at 500%. And Pittsburgh and Virginia Tech are the ones at the top right now. They both are 1-0 in conference. It's so crazy how North Carolina's played 5 conference games so far, and Pitt and Tech have only played 1. I think that's really strange.
I know, it really is. So much of it is when the bye weeks come and just how the schedule is structured. But yeah, no, listen, like you said, third in the Coastal. Virginia was probably, I would say they're probably out of the Coastal race if they had lost against Louisville. But they didn't. They're 2-2. It's critical that North Carolina dropped to 2-3 because North Carolina owns a tiebreaker over UVA. So, you know, UVA, if they want to win the Coastal, will have to stay one game ahead of North Carolina, which they are. Virginia owns the tiebreaker over Miami. Well, hopefully Virginia will get it against Duke. But yeah, Pitt and Virginia Tech are kind of the wild cards, and they might be the biggest competition right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess we'll see how it plays out. They play each other this weekend, so one of them will be 2-0 after this. Another will be 1-1. But they're, like you said, they're the ones that really haven't played conference games yet. And so that'll be a big part of it. But yeah. Virginia, it's a weird – God, it's such a weird year in the ACC. As we say every year, I mean, the weirdest thing to me is Clemson not really controlling their own destiny with Wake Forest up in the Atlantic. To me, that's just insane.
Wake Forest has been fun to watch this season.
They're a good team, man. And credit to them, because Virginia and Wake Forest recruit a lot of the same players.
Mm-hmm.
And there's several players that come down to a decision between UVA, Wake Forest, and maybe one or two other schools. So the credit to Dave Clawson, man. He's doing a great job down there.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch. Rob, anything else to mention? You know, the basketball schedule's been out for a while. We haven't talked about that. We're not going to do it now. We've run over. For sure, but we can talk about it another time. Any last thoughts on football, UVA?
You know, not really. I would say, like you said, we'll definitely get into basketball. That's coming. Media days being this past week. There's a lot to talk about. So we'll get there. That's coming in due time. Virginia opens the season November 9th against Navy. So a little under a month to go. But listen, I mean, Virginia, in many respects, is lucky to be 4-2. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't take much for Virginia to be 2-4 in football, that is. But listen, they're 4-2. It's been a bit different than I thought it would be coming into the season.
Yeah.
But both you and I had us at 4-2 right now. So Virginia is still on track and potentially able to still have a good season. So it's been up and down. It's been a roller coaster, but we've seen improvement from the defense.
Yeah.
Brennan Armstrong has been incredible. So my hope for Virginia is that they'll take care of business against Duke, take care of business against Georgia Tech. Neither of those are gimmies, but two games that I think Virginia should be able to win.
Mm-hmm.
And then listen, you're 6-2. Let's see what they can make happen. Notre Dame looks much more beatable than they did earlier in the year. BYU probably is better than at least I gave them credit for at the beginning of the season. And Pittsburgh and Virginia Tech are probably still kind of too early to tell with neither of them really facing conference tests yet.
Yeah.
So this is still a season where Virginia can, you know, be competitive, and it would be hard to win the Coastal already having two losses, but you know, it's not totally out of the realm of possibility just yet.
Right.
So I'm excited for the second half of the season. You know, I'm sure there'll be plenty more nail biters to come, but man, you only get 12 of these weekends a year.
Right.
Like that's how it is with football. So yeah. You just got to enjoy every one.
I'm excited to experience it. I'm excited to see where the rest of the season takes us. And, yeah, I'm pumped. I hope I can make it to more games, but you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, man. Well, you and me both. Hopefully we'll be at as many games as we can.
Right. But with that, I think we're pretty much done with this episode. So thank you so much for listening to this long episode. We are the Guys in Ties podcast. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Guys in Ties Pod. Make sure to follow us on Snapchat and Instagram at Guys in Ties Pod. Go ahead and follow us on Spotify and iTunes if you want to keep listening. And we will see y'all next time. Go Hoos.
Go Hoos.